Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us on this edition of Trumpet Radio Live. A lot to talk about today. Even the zoo animals are leaving Gaza. It's getting pretty bad. Someone found a giant gold nugget. There's still gold out there. Huge. We'll talk about that coming up. Also, the U.S. military. How much do they spend, or rather, how little? You'll be surprised. Many in the U.S. have given up on God. We've got the numbers that show that is the case. And you can also add honking your horn to the list of triggers. A bicyclist freaks out. We have all that coming up on Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us today on Trumpet Radio Live, the Thursday edition. We're on 101.3 KPCG, and we're online at kpcg.fm. Live link there at thetrumpet.com as well. I'm Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon here today. And so we were talking the other day, Grant, briefly about your wife. She's from South Africa originally, and so she had to go get her her test for her learner's permit, and I forgot to ask about it. Things went okay?
She passed. Yeah, she did a good job. She's sitting over there in the corner of the studio right now, too.
She's
cracking up about what we're talking about.
Wanted to give some moral support for what's happening here. Well, that's good. Yeah, so be ready for learning to drive. Anytime I'm in town and I see the driver's ed cars, I give them space. I give them plenty of room.
Get off the road.
Never know. Never know what's going to happen there. So that's probably why those signs are on there, to warn us of what's could potentially happen.
She said I'll be teaching her how to drive more on campus, so just avoid being on campus for a while.
That's the Herbert W. Armstrong College campus for those that are passing by, right past Waterloo in the Edmond, Oklahoma City area. Thanks for joining us online, too, though, at kpcg.fm. A lot of listeners around the world, and we've got a lot of stories from around the world as well. So interesting video on CNN.com. Video shows a Starbucks being flattened during a tornado. This happened in Kokomo, Indiana. So it's pretty interesting if you get a chance to check it out at CNN. The Starbucks just completely wiped off the map.
No one was inside?
I didn't really see any of the details about it. They didn't have much of a write-up, just the video that the guy shot. So that's always terrifying when those things come through. Here in Oklahoma, we know about that firsthand. And it's just, I guess it's kind of odd when it's a business that you know, Starbucks.
Yeah, so we get wrecked by tornadoes pretty much every year here. It's a pretty serious problem that we have, and everyone seems to have a tornado shelter around here.
Well, one of the eeriest things I have seen is that when that huge tornado came through Moore a few years ago, there was a video that a guy shot from his dash cam driving down a street that about a minute or two later was gone. Like he was right in front of it. I think it was a storm chaser or somebody. And it's so strange to watch it and know that just in a couple of minutes, none of that's going to be there.
Wow.
Amazing. I mean, it's just like that earthquake that happened in Italy. Towns are just gone.
Yeah, I wonder what the mentality must be to be a storm chaser, because everyone is bunkering down and these guys are literally driving right behind the tornado or right in front of it. Big time risk takers. But sometimes that could come back to bite you.
Yeah. I mean, they know what they're doing in most cases, and they kind of know how to look and get out of the way. But during that that time where we had that severe tornado there in Moore a couple of years ago, and we had a few tornadoes happen within a few days, those are the ones that killed the people from, I think, the Weather Channel. And they know what they're doing, but the thing just, you know, you never know exactly what they're going to do, the tornadoes. And I remember the thing just went a different way, and they got caught in it. So it can happen.
Yeah, those things are very powerful. They move way faster than a vehicle could. So even if you think you're a comfortable distance away, it's only a comfortable distance until it starts moving your direction.
Yeah, terrifying when those things happen. So anyway, you can check out that video if you'd like to there on CNN.com. This is a strange headline, but it kind of highlights, I guess, the situation in Gaza. The worst zoo in the world closes. That's the headline. An international charity on Wednesday removed 15 animals from a Gaza Strip zoo, freeing them from stifling conditions in what is called the worst zoo in the world, hoping to grant them a better life abroad. You surprised by that?
No, it's anytime the worst thing closes, that's a good thing. It should always, you should be ashamed of yourself if you run the very worst zoo.
Yeah, they said Four Paws, which is an animal welfare group, crossed from Gaza into Israel. They told, you know, yesterday we talked about how they're telling the Americans to get out of Gaza and go to Israel, and the animals now are going too. They took a tiger, five monkeys, a porcupine, an emu, and a few other animals. Most of the animals are destined for an animal sanctuary in Jordan, while the tiger is headed to a refuge in South Africa. So I've been to a few, you know, those animal refuges before, and they're pretty neat. You know, the animals probably needed some help, and they're it's neat to see that. But they were just in bad conditions here. They couldn't feed them. It was the Khan Yunis Zoo. They had financial difficulties, they said, and they couldn't provide them with proper care and food. So the owner did ask the organization for help, which is good. But sometimes you see that where people, whether it's a zoo or a private person, they try to get a hold of a bunch of animals and then they can't take care of them. Now you got a starving tiger. Not a good idea.
Yeah. You know, God forbid the tiger ever gets out of the cage when it's starving like that. Yeah, you need to move the zoo over to the Israeli-controlled half. They're not spending all their money on funding terrorism, so they could actually probably upkeep the zoo.
Yeah, what does it say about an area when you have the world's worst zoo on your land?
It's not a good thing. No.
bad situation there. This is a kind of interesting story here. A prospector finds a huge gold nugget, a massive gold nugget. We were talking the other day about, it's always interesting you think about what's just buried below the surface. And, of course, as a kid, I think we've all probably read a book or two about finding gold or something, and the idea of doing that's exciting. Well, this guy did it. A 145-ounce gold nugget has been reportedly found in Victoria, Australia. So if anyone wants to go prospect, that's where to go. By a real-life prospector, and it could be worth more than $190,710, $250,000 Australian. When it goes to auction. And they say the big old nugget has been named Friday's Joy because he found it on Friday.
Well, he's rich. Good deal.
Yeah, and he's anonymous, of course. He doesn't want people to know who he is. But he initially found a 9-ounce tennis ball-shaped gold nugget 2 feet deep. He returned the next day to see if there was more. And lo and behold, there was. He had a metal detector. And so he went around, and about 12 inches below the ground, he found it. He said, "I could just barely make out the top of something as I began to scrape away the clay and the dig deeper. I really couldn't believe my eyes. This wasn't an old piece of steel in front of me. It was a colossal gold nugget." So, I mean, you know, that's the dream, isn't it? You know, you dig down a little bit, you know, kind of move some dirt, and there's this giant gold nugget, 145 ounces. There's a picture of it on the internet. You can find it if you want. And it's just this huge thing. So that's like a dream come true.
This should serve as vindication for everyone who probes the beach with a metal detector. People give them weird looks, but, I mean, that it really paid off for that guy.
Yeah, and so funny, too, to go and find a tennis ball-sized one and then go, "Oh, I wonder if there's something else down there." Dig around a little bit and get another one.
He's got a big secret. He doesn't want to tell anyone where he found it, probably.
I bet, because if people found out, I mean, there'd be a bunch of people down there with... You know, here in the States, they have that Diamond Park. Have you ever heard of that? I forget where it is. I want to say it's in Arkansas. Mm. But they have found a lot of diamonds there, and they're not huge. But you can go there, and they'll let you go look for them. And you can, a lot of people find them.
Wow.
Some people have even found some pretty good-sized ones, and it's finders keepers.
They can just sell them or do whatever they want, too,
yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, I mean, in most cases, it's just for fun because they're not probably worth a lot because they're so small or of a poor grade. But sometimes people find them and use them for a ring, you know, like an engagement ring. Or there have been cases of people finding some pretty large ones. It's pretty rare, but apparently there's so many there that you can go and have some fun and maybe get a little diamond.
They're probably not in their finished state either, so they might require a little bit of work to polish that thing up.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's like this gold nugget this guy found. The picture of it just looked like this big old rock, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I'd be dumb enough to be like, "Oh, get this thing out of here."
Yeah.
It's like, you just chucked a gold nugget over your shoulder.
Yeah, but it's probably not bright yellow and shiny like you might imagine.
I want gold bars.
Just dig up straight up gold bars.
Or, you know, what really helps me is if it's in like a pirate's treasure chest. To me, that's a great indicator that this is valuable.
It's a dead giveaway then. Yeah. You don't have to be a detective to figure out what substance it is.
You got to work with me a little bit here. So. It reminds me, when I was a kid, we used to eat occasionally at this steakhouse. It was kind of a family steakhouse thing. And I think it had something to, the theme was something with pirates. So when you were done, if you finished your meal as a kid, you could go to the pirate's chest and pick out a toy.
Oh, wow.
So that was a big thing. But I did discover that they'd let you go anyway, because one day I just couldn't, and I was like, oh, no. And they're like, go ahead. So I got to pick something out of the pirate's treasure chest.
And that just saps all motivation to finish your meal. They're building bad habits in children now.
The baked potato was quite large. I mean, I was just a child.
It's the size of your head back then.
What do they expect? Yeah, so kind of interesting stories there. And if you're in the Victoria, Australia area, get out your metal detector. It's actually a good advertisement for metal detectors, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because a lot of times you see people with them and you think, oh, they're never going to find anything. But boy, this guy sure did.
Yeah, that's a big time discovery. That really paid off for him. He's probably happy that he wasted so much time walking around with a metal detector and finding nothing.
Yeah, he had a lucky streak. This is a really interesting and kind of a frightening article here. This is from Forbes. The headline is, U.S. Army fears major war likely within 5 years, but lacks the money to prepare. They say nothing focuses the mind like fear. What's focusing the minds of U.S. Army leaders right now is the fear that they will be in a major war within 5 years. They know they'll be fighting terrorists and insurgents and so forth, but they say what really preoccupies them is the likely return of large-scale conventional conflict, maybe with Russia in Eastern Europe or Iran in the Middle East or North Korea in Northeast Asia, maybe in all three places. And so they point out here that they're not, they usually don't say this publicly. They don't want to draw attention to it, but they're concerned. And again, not just terrorists. We're talking about large-scale wars.
Isn't this the 21st century? I thought we weren't supposed to deal with issues through war anymore.
Right.
Well, I thought there were no more threats and the world's safer than it's ever been.
That's one side of the story. But, you know, it's like when if you watch the State of the Union address, the last one here in the States, there'd be certain comments made by the president about the military, and people would be cheering. And you look at the military, and they were stone-faced.
Wow.
They did not look like they agreed with what was being said.
It just seems like over and over, the people on the ground are contradicting the message coming out of the Obama administration. The same thing with the Border Patrol endorsing Donald Trump and saying, look, we can't just have all these people flooding in. Agency after agency on the ground is endorsing someone who will actually enforce laws and prioritize protecting the country.
Yeah, two different messages. So these are military officials now that are talking, senior Army officials, and they say it seems clear that the Obama administration's pivot to the Pacific, announced in 2012, has created a geopolitical vacuum stretching from the Baltic Sea to the Persian Gulf that Russia and Iran are trying to fill. Pretty interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, and not much is happening in Asia in the U.S.'s favor either. China's pretty much telling this nation to get out, so their pivot isn't even paying off.
And if you think about a pivot, say in the game of basketball, you use your pivot foot, you turn your back on a certain direction.
That's true.
And in this case, we've turned our back on quite a bit of the world, including the Middle East, as they say there, and the Baltic area as well. So they know this. They're aware of this. It's not like our enemies aren't. Because like they said, you have Russia trying to fill the Baltic area, and Iran's trying to fill the Middle East, that power vacuum. And it's just fulfilled prophecy. It's been talked about for a long time. TheTrumpet.com has talked about that. Key of David presenter Gerald Fleury has talked about that for many years, about Iran in particular. And there's a lot about Russia that's been talked about recently as well. And it's all because of this power vacuum from the U.S. pivoting away from these areas.
Right. And just think about how these foreign powers are going to handle filling that vacuum. America has been truly benevolent when it comes to just dealing with other nations. And I don't think it's going to be the same way when you have someone like Russia or Iran taking over.
No, absolutely. I mean, you can read a lot of history about World War II, and I'm reading a pretty interesting book right now about some of the German experiences at the end of the war, World War II, and their last real stand against Russia. They weren't trying to win. They knew they couldn't. They were just trying to hold Russia back long enough to let the Western powers come in further into Germany, because you wanted to fall into the West's hands. You didn't want to fall into Russia's hands, because they
exactly
knew what they would do. That's the way it's been historically. So Like you say, the West has been much kinder to these other nations.
Yeah, some of the most shocking brutality ever witnessed in war was between the Germans and the Russians. And really, it would have gone either way. Whoever won that was absolutely going to crush the other side and make no mistake about just brutalizing them in any manner.
Yeah, and there's, the history is out there. This article continues and says the level of spending is almost unbelievably low. So here we're talking about these major threats. They think within 5 years. And the level of spending for the U.S. military is unbelievably low. How low, you ask? Well, I have numbers for you. The Army spends less on procuring wheeled and tracked vehicles in a year than General Motors generates in sales each week.
Oof.
Its $3.6 billion budget request for helicopter procurement, about 8 hours worth of federal spending at current rates, is focused mainly on upgrading Reagan-era rotorcraft because it can't afford to buy new ones. Just think about that for a second. $3.6 billion budget request for helicopter procurement. That's 8 hours worth of federal spending at current rates.
We can't even get that much for them.
Wow-wee. Yeah. I mean, that's terrifying on both sides of it, that we're not putting any more into the military and that we're spending that much.
Yeah, if we're in $20 trillion in debt and spending money left and right, we must have a really high opinion of other nations' mercy to weaken ourselves like this so publicly that other nations could attack, but we just apparently think they won't.
And listen to this one. This is stunning. The military, the U.S. military's ammunition budget is $1.5 billion. That's just a hair more than Americans spend on fireworks each year. You believe that?
Now, just pathetic.
That's a lot to be spent on fireworks, but nevertheless, that's astounding. And just the fact that we spend $3.6 billion in 8 hours, why don't everybody just take the day off? Take the day off, and we'll just save ourselves some cash here. Just one day a week, the federal government, don't go to work.
That's right. It might help a lot.
Unbelievable. So this is out there, and it's public info. And like they say, senior Army officials are circumspect about discussing the danger in open forums. They don't want to advertise U.S. vulnerabilities, but it's out there for everybody to see.
It's so obvious that we can't really hide it, so why not even just talk about it?
Pretty stunning. And then, like it's talked about on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show today, we'll talk about that in a minute. But, you know, Iran just they ran off one of our big destroyers with some little fishing craft.
Yeah.
You know, oh, no, look out, here they come. Unbelievable.
Four shots, all four boats are gone forever.
Yep.
That's all it would take.
Yep, wouldn't take much. You could even just probably, I mean, like, move the U.S.'s ship past them fast, and it would probably take care. Probably the wake would probably flip those other boats over. This one is bad news as well. If you live up in Oregon, it's a beautiful state, by the way, but you're about to have some problems. Warnings of rate hikes as Oregon becomes first state to kill coal. This has been a big thing on the Obama administration's agenda for a long time. Get rid of coal power and replace it with rainbows and sunshine. Warm yourself by that rainbow. The massive coal-fired plant in Boardman, Oregon, is just 4 years away from being shut down for good. At that point, Oregon coal production will be no more after the state became the first in the nation to completely ban coal power. So this is a pretty big deal. 4 years. That'll be just in time for the next big war, apparently.
Yeah. Hillary Clinton actually generate a lot of controversy by saying she wanted to just close down the entire coal industry, and people just said, well, wait a minute, that means thousands and thousands of jobs will be lost out of nowhere. We think the joblessness in this country is bad now, despite what the twisted stats might say. Imagine shutting down a whole industry and not giving these people an alternative.
That's one side of it that's very important. The other side of it is they don't have anything to replace this power with.
Yeah.
The mandate, they say, signed into law earlier this year was the result of an environmentalist-fueled push by the Democrat-controlled legislature. Under the plan, coal production will end once the Boardman plant shutters in 2020. Utilities would still be able to buy coal power from out of state for another 10 years. I'm sure they'll sell that cheap. Until a 2030 deadline to end coal use entirely, as you were mentioning there, Grant. It says, but the phase-out already has groups warning that residents are headed for big rate increases and brownouts. They say this is basically a wind mandate. There's no way wind can physically power the grid because days, weeks on end, wind produces zero.
Oh, man. Yeah, just think of a dead, still day. All those days, the windmills just don't generate anything at all. So we're trying to rely on something that just has to do with how hard the wind blows that day. It's totally up to chance.
And, I mean, everybody would love a clean solution to energy, of course. But who's got a good idea for it? Mm-hmm. I mean, I haven't seen anything. They say in Oregon, coal power still fills one third of the electricity demand, despite a building boom. So they're building new houses. And typically when they build these new homes, you know, you can put all your green energy and so forth in it. They say renewables such as wind and solar power make up just 8% of the electricity portfolio. So we're not just talking about old structures. Brand new ones, you can put in whatever you want. Only 8% of it is the green power sources. So the major utilities supported the coal ban, even though officials can't say for sure how they'll keep the lights on. They feared a ballot initiative that would have been even less flexible. So they didn't like any of it, but they thought, well, if we don't agree to this now, maybe something worse will happen. They don't know how they're going to keep people's power on.
How much of this do you think stems from just the whole focus on global warming or climate change, acting like that's the biggest threat to the country? I think in a lot of cases, just saying that using coal is so damaging to the environment, that's just exaggerated.
Well, definitely it's something where they're it's like a two-pronged argument, you know, global warming, and then we also have been kind of guilted into, why should you have your home set at a certain temperature, or why should you have this or that? Because we have the technology to do it.
And I'm paying for it.
Yeah. Those are a couple of reasons.
It's pretty simple.
Yeah. It's not like it's being stolen from somebody.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah, they could have power over in wherever, but we stole it from them. It's just insane.
It is.
So anyway, that's some of the headlines going on today. Now we have a few from the Of Course This Is Happening segment. There are some things that are happening, and you have to just say, of course this is happening. You ready to get pizzas delivered to you by drones?
Sure, I guess.
They're going to try it.
Whatever's simple enough. You know, actually, on campus, they can't come in the gates to deliver, or I guess they don't deliver this far out in the countryside. So
yeah,
a drone could probably pass those limits.
Yeah, that's right. I think most of the local Edmond shops come out to Waterloo, mm-hmm. and I think that's just a
and
touch.
Waterloo.
Just beyond the pizza border.
That's the worst.
They say pizza drones are go. Domino's gets New Zealand drone delivery okay. So this is going to be in New Zealand. We have some listeners online at kpcg.fm in New Zealand. And you go ahead and try this. Report back to us. Send us an email at kpcg.fm. Comments at kpcg.fm. And tell us how it worked out. Aerial pizza delivery may sound futuristic, but Domino's has been given the green light to test New Zealand pizza delivery via drones. I'm just trying to imagine how this is going to happen. Yeah, I know in Alaska, some people, when they order pizza, it has to be flown in on a plane because they're so far away.
Wow.
So if you're going to have pizza night, it's kind of like the community event. And they'll meet, the plane will fly in, and it's one of those that'll land on the water. And then the pizza guy will walk up the dock or whatever. Here you go. So, because it's Alaska. So this is, they already do that with planes in Alaska, but that's a different situation. I'm just envisioning we've all seen drones, and I just envision it flying in and like dropping the pizza on me. You know, the topping's going to be okay? Is it going to be, is a bird going to get in the way and start eating it?
You better be good at making a catch and just absorbing it instead of letting it splatter everywhere. It's probably just going to come flying down from 30 feet above.
Well, I'm always, when I try to envision drones delivering things, I always just try to envision what that interaction will be like. Do I say thank you? Do I put my hand out? Like, how do the drone and I make the exchange without it attacking me? Or, you know, what if I only get half of the box and he flies away with the breadsticks?
It better not be a weaponized drone either, because then it could perceive any of your motions as a threat, take you out.
Yeah, make sure you tip well. That might be your last pizza delivery.
So, there's so many potential problems with that, and the fact that they could surveil your house while they
right.
while they drop off the pizza.
Right. They don't have too many details about exactly how this is going to happen, but they're gonna just give it a shot and see. It will offer drone delivery specials at the lunch of the the launch of the trial, with plans to extend the dimensions, weight, and distance of the deliveries throughout the trial. Then they're going to look for some customer feedback and see if people like the drones. You're not going to be able to get everything, all of the products, only certain ones and certain customers. So they're going to test it out, and if it works, maybe we'll see it here in the States.
Yeah, hopefully no jokers pick off the drone while it's flying close overhead. You know, if you see something carrying 6 boxes of pizza, it's a pretty easy target hovering slowly in the air there.
Well, sure.
Slap it down.
We've all had that, you know, where it's a Sunday and the football games are on and you see the pizza guy drive by to your neighbor's house and you're like, oh, I should have got pizza. You know, you see the drone flying over.
There's no guilt in just taking it, probably.
Well,
you're not taking it from a human being.
Sadly, that'll probably happen.
Yeah.
I mean, anything you deliver, I mean, you see it happen today even where, FedEx will drop something off and somebody runs and steals it.
Yeah.
I mean, that happens, especially around the holidays when there's packages being delivered more often. So I could see something like that happening, sadly, but it'll be interesting to see. Food delivered by a drone. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. Hopefully there's no radiation from the machine either getting into the food. There's a lot of different things that I could think up. Probably not logical, really, but that just seems like there could be a lot of problems.
Cook it as they deliver it. It's like a drone microwave.
That's awesome.
By the way, kind of related to this, talking about microwaves, I took my daughter to the store the other night, and we were looking around. She wanted to look at the toys, and there was like these teddy bears, sort of plush animals. I looked at it, and you're supposed to put it in the microwave and heat it up. And I thought, what in the world?
Is it edible?
No. Yeah. I guess you're just supposed to warm it up, and then they're supposed to play with it. I'm like, that seems like a horrible idea.
Does it make it come alive somehow?
I don't know. I never saw anything like that, and I'm just scared of it. So I must be getting older because the newer things are scaring me now.
That's terrifying. I don't think anyone should feel bad about being terrified by that.
Yeah, I mean, I just can't imagine saying, all right, it's bedtime, bring your animals, let's put them in the microwave. It just doesn't seem like that should happen.
Not at all.
Here's another story from the Of Course This Is Happening. We talk sometimes about what they call triggers. Now, this is not the horse from Gene Autry, by the way, back in the day, or whatever that cowboy was. He had a horse named Trigger.
Trigger.
I like that horse. Now, this is a new social justice sort of thing where people say something and it triggers somebody and makes them really mad. And so it's kind of a threat, like, don't trigger me. And so there's all kinds of things that are happening that fit into this category. And here's one of them, honking your horn at a bicyclist. That can be a trigger warning.
I guess anything today, any excuse to throw a fit like a toddler, and people are going to take that excuse, it seems like.
Now, and I, you know, before we get into the story, I could see thinking like, oh, yeah, I mean, you don't want somebody just like being rude and honking their horn. That, of course, that's irritating. But this wasn't the case. This guy is in New York City. He was driving his car Wednesday night. A woman on a bicycle came driving past him. And the light was red, and he honked to warn her because she was going to go right through the red light, and then she lost her mind.
Yeah, that's what people need to understand. Triggering is not just being irritated for a second about something that happens. It's an explosion. If you've ever seen a video of someone being triggered, it's extreme.
So it was recorded on this guy's car dash cam. He said the fact that she went crazy when someone honked at her, the way she acted out, he just couldn't believe it. He's 22 years old, and he did not want to be identified. But anyway, so he honked to warn the bicyclist that there was a red light for her own safety. He said she was going to pass the red light, so I just honked at her. I honked my horn from my car, and I just showed her that it's a red light. So the woman heard the honk. She abruptly got off the bike, threw it down in front of the car, stormed over to the driver's side, and then she went violent, grabbing him, pulling off his sunglasses. She stole his sunglasses.
Well, I guess that's okay because he triggered her.
Apparently. She started cursing, and then she jumped off, and she jumped off her bike, started cursing, and went after him. He said, literally, I've never in my life heard a person curse like that for 5 minutes.
Oh, that's a counter. It's probably an endless amount of curse words just spewed out.
He said she sprung her hand in and just grabbed the glasses off my face. He says, you can say whatever you want, and you can be mad and everything, but you can't take my glasses, and you can't touch me. So police were looking for this woman. He took a picture of her her bike and her, I guess. So, I mean, what a crazy thing. He was just trying to help her out and be a good citizen, and she lost her mind about it. You got to be careful what you do out there.
Yeah, that's why you just kind of want to today just avoid any sort of conflict or possible confrontation. There's just people out there, you never know how they're going to respond because, I mean, look, people need the tiniest trigger or microaggression to set them off in a violent way.
So, yeah, just maybe you should have let her go through the red light. I don't know. But, I don't know why she got so mad about it. I understand that if someone's kind of being rude and they're just honking incessantly, that's irritating, no doubt. Mm-hmm. But this wasn't that sort of a situation. So she went crazy about it. Those are some of the weird things that are happening. Of course those things are happening. Yeah, I would say, look, just calm down. I'll order you a pizza. It'll be here. The drone will drop it off. Mm-hmm. We can have a pizza together. That'll solve our problems.
Yeah, whenever I'm in public, I actually get a little bit nervous whenever something happens. There's been a couple times where I'm out with my dad at a game or something, and the person behind him is just kicking his chair the whole time. He turns around and says, like, "Could you just stop doing that?" I'm like, "Ooh, I would just rather take the kicks the whole game instead of cause a riot, possibly."
Yeah, you never know exactly what's gonna trigger somebody.
He can handle himself, though. He's not gonna get beat up by anybody.
No, he'll be fine. Those are some of the things that are going on. The Key of David program's coming up here in just a bit on KPCG. One of the programs today is on Judah's Wound, which talks about the peace process over there in the Middle East. That has been a big problem for Jerusalem for a long, long time.
Giving up land for no reason. No peace has ever resulted from giving away your territory. In fact, it just makes the other side hate you even more or just disrespect you even more and keep doing what they're doing. It's working.
There's even today, last couple of days, there are headlines about Vladimir Putin now. Is he going to step in and make peace between Israel and their neighbors? So
might as well give it a try. It's not working. America's not doing a good job.
Right, and that's the thing that's interesting about that headline is that where's America? You know, we're not doing anything except trying to destabilize Israel.
Well, the biggest issue is America tries to pretend like the two sides are the same. One side is being led by a terrorist group, and they teach their kids from a young age about knife attacks and things like that. The other side, if the Palestinians stopped attacking, there would be peace just like that. You don't see Jews initiating attacks.
There's a lot that's written about it. There's a really good book that talks about that, The Rise of ISIS. And it goes and also talks about Hamas and it talks about Israel and how Israel goes above and beyond to follow the rules of engagement. And Hamas, at every chance, is breaking them. But then knowing the other side will be held to them or will hold themselves to them, always point the finger back and try to catch them in it. And it's well documented.
Yeah, and a lot of time the terrorists even shield themselves with women and children. And if, you know, the Israelis even, I believe, announce that they're going to send rockets over. But then the terrorists just gear up and they defend themselves with other human beings.
Yep.
As if it's the Israelis' fault for that happening.
They will go so far as to send them text messages. Yeah. They text them. Hey, yeah, by the way, get out of here because we're going to blow up this spot. And what do? They hurt all the kids over there.
Yeah.
And then say, well, look at what happened. Well, yeah, look what happened.
Israel's so formal with its way of dealing with that. I mean, that goes back hundreds of years ago where they'd meet on the battlefield and announce they were going to fight and then just fight in the middle of the battlefield. There was no really, there weren't very many surprise attacks back then. That still happened. Now, they're giving a warning every single time when today surprise attacks are totally fine.
Yeah, two different sides, two different rules, I guess, of operation there. So it's a really good Key of David program. Make sure you listen for that. Judah's Wound, it's coming up here in a bit on KPCG. And if you'd like to watch it online, you can see that at thetrumpet.com as well. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show today with your host, Stephen Fleury from Edstone, England. He really gets into what's going on with the U.S. and Iran. Great program. We talked about it somewhat yesterday. More depth today. Make sure you listen for that. He brings out how President Obama's track record has been to empower the Iranian regime in every way. The one that's in power right now, the one that is so intolerant of everybody and anything else, and he's empowering them.
Yeah, and at the same time, he has picked off dictators from Egypt and Libya and other places, as Mr. Fleury was saying. Why didn't he do the same thing with Iran? Iran had 500,000 protesters in the streets saying, look, you rigged the election for Ahmadinejad to win. Why did America not help them? But when 200 protesters showed up in Egypt, he toppled Mubarak.
Yeah, there's a really good piece about this that is talked about, too, on the show. This is from Bloomberg, Why Obama Let Iran's Green Revolution Fail. It says Obama wasn't just reluctant to show solidarity in 2009. He feared the demonstrations would sabotage his secret outreach to Iran. He's obsessed with this, as is pointed out on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show today. In his new book, The Iran Wars, which is talked about a fair bit on today's show, Wall Street Journal reporter Jay Solomon uncovers new details on how far Obama went to avoid helping Iran's green movement. Behind the scenes, Obama overruled advisors who wanted to do what America had done at similar transitions from dictatorship to democracy and signal America's support, and he said, no way.
Yeah, he was obsessed with that. It's all about his legacy, this whole making peace with a mortal enemy in Iran. It seems like he's picked a few policies from the very start that were going to be part of his legacy long term. Obamacare is another example, reforming prisons nationwide. There's things like that that he has determined to stick with the entire 8 years, even when it's proven to backfire.
And it is backfiring. This Bloomberg piece says Solomon reports that Obama ordered the CIA to sever contacts it had with green movement supporters. The agency has contingency plans for supporting democratic uprisings anywhere in the world. This includes providing dissidents with communications, money, and in extreme cases, even arms, Solomon writes. But in this case, the White House ordered it to stand down.
It stands out because they didn't do that anywhere else. And it just shows you he had to have had a special reason to treat this Middle Eastern nation different from all the others. It is part of his legacy.
And I just thought that phrase there at the end was so good. Stand down. We've heard that before, haven't we?
Yeah, Benghazi.
That's the thing. Oh, stand down. Don't do anything. Even though the program is already in place here to help these democratic uprisings. And so it's funny how the media just gave a pass on that. At least they're reporting on it now a little bit. At least a Wall Street Journal writer, Jay Solomon, at least he's written a book on it. Mm-hmm. You know, good for him for at least investigating it a little bit. People can think whatever they want about it. That's their freedom. But at least get all the facts, at least get all the information so you can kind of, you know, make up your mind about which way things are going.
Yeah, it has been really tough for the media, even when they want to investigate issues like this. Mr. Flory played a clip on the show this morning of a reporter asking one of the administration officials, so how come you were able to set up a banking relationship with Iran to get those transfers over, those $400 million or whatever it was? Mm. And he said, "Well, I don't know. I don't know how it happened." And then he said, "We said we're not going to talk about this." Okay, so you can do something blatantly against U.S. law, and then say you won't talk about it, and that's the end of it.
Yeah, it's amazing. Who could not be qualified for that job? You'd have to have really no qualifications. I'm talking about standing out there and being like, whatever, was that the press secretary or somebody?
I didn't catch the name of the man who was speaking.
One of the spokesmen. I mean, you know, all you have to do is stand there and say, I don't know. I'm not sure. We don't want to talk about that.
Yeah.
They should hire somebody that is mute.
Right.
And then they could say, well, he just can't say anything.
Yeah. I saw Josh Earnest give a press briefing the other day, and he once again compared Iranian hardliners to conservatives in America. When you think about it, those two are on the far ends. Both sides, they do not want to have any relationship with the other nation. The Obama administration and the so-called moderates in Iran, they're talking to each other. So they're the ones who are friends with the enemy. At least the conservatives in America don't want to have a relationship with Iran at all.
Yeah, and for good reason.
Yeah. I mean,
it's just unbelievable the stuff that they do. So that's on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show today. Really, really good story. Good program, gets into a lot of the details here about what's going on with Iran, and you're just not hearing it too many places, so make sure you do listen for that Trumpet Daily Radio Show as well. This is a really interesting story that we have that came across, I think it was yesterday. It's from the Pew. They always do polls, and they try to, you know, get some information on different topics. And it says Americans giving up on God and miracles. Half of Americans who have left their church no longer believe in God, leading a surge of nearly one quarter of the nation who have no affiliation with any religion, according to a new survey. This is pretty interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting. So many people are just leaving their churches. 49% of the so-called nuns left their church and religion because they just don't believe. Another 20% said they don't like organized religion. Other reasons included common sense and a lack of belief in miracles for leaving their churches. One thing that's easily forgotten about miracles is, you know, if you just live your life however you want to, why can you expect God to just intervene in the extreme moments in your life? It doesn't make a lot of sense. I mean, if you expect God to do something for you, shouldn't you also be trying to do things for God?
Well, that's a really good point, because it's easy for somebody to say, you know, I don't believe in God, and I you know, I've never seen any proof of this, that, or the other. And but, you know, if you turn the argument around, it's like, well, what how have you been living? What have you been doing individually? I find it a very interesting thing, because, like I said, I've been reading this book, and this ties in a little bit with this, about, you know, these experiences after World War II, and people saw horrific things, terrible things. And one thing that this particular author said was, you know, they don't believe in God anymore. How could it happen? How could this happen? Because, you know, how could God allow these things to happen? And, but the question they don't, and I understand on a, you know, certain level, they're so horrified by what they saw. But on the other hand, well, what about man? What about man's responsibility? You know, we did it to ourselves. And yeah. So that's the thing they don't really talk about is, and the author comes away saying that people were pretty much good, which I thought was stunning. I'm like, well, wait a second, you got that completely backwards.
That's what the huge problem is with religion today. It's just come as you are. No need to make any changes. You're just wonderful how you are right now. There's no even hint of trying to follow any laws, because apparently the law was done away. So there's no real responsibility for any Christians to do anything. Then when you have no miracles in your life, that should give you reason to wonder, maybe I'm not doing it the right way.
Well, and this kind of, I think, ties into the fact that a lot of Americans are falling into this growing trend where they're getting rid of religion and giving up on God, as it says. It kind of also falls into some of what you hear from the liberals in the country, in the U.S., where the radical left in particular, because, you know, there's that famous quote about, well, you know, those conservatives, they want to stick to their God and their guns. And lumping everything together, like, you know, and portraying it like it's a bad thing. What's wrong with believing in God, and what's wrong with having a religion and believing that there is a higher power that, you know, is the authority on things?
Right. Well, believing in God today is something that people scoff at in pretty much on pretty much every platform of society. And people who go to church or they try to have some sort of belief system know that there is no more persecuted group in the country than Christians right now. Conservative Christians are apparently the biggest threat to openness and freedom in this country, according to a lot of people. So if you just want to avoid persecution and blend in with the crowd a little bit, it also makes sense in that way to leave the churches.
Yeah, it's the kind of the spirit of the age, I guess, would be a good way to sum it up. But yeah, it is so interesting that people are going this direction. But they have a lot of good information here in this survey. They give some reasons why things are happening. And they give some examples of reasons why people are unaffiliated now. The modern education fits into that. Some people say learning about evolution when I went away to college.
Yeah, and some others said even just science in general made them doubt God. You know, we've seen so many archaeological digs uncover evidence of biblical stories, and even that ark recreation that we were talking about the other day, mm-hmm. they give a lot of practical ways for how bringing all these animals on an ark and surviving for over a year could have been possible. So they're bringing it down to the practical, physical level and showing, yeah, it is pretty incredible this happened, but it technically is possible, even if on a physical level.
Yeah, it's really interesting, some of the people's thinking here. Well, one of the thoughts that people put out there is that there's a lack of any sort of scientific or specific evidence of a creator. Really? Take a look in the mirror. Where did you come from?
Yeah.
Or the earth, or the air, or the trees. Now, I know they say, well, they just showed up out of nowhere. If you're just going to look at it on a purely what sounds more ridiculous level, that an intelligent being created it, or it just showed up magically, I think I'd go with the first one.
Yeah, faith is considered a huge part of a religion, but evolution requires more faith than believing in a creator to say that some tiny particle that came from nothing, which is implausible in the first place, but over millions and billions of years, maybe grew tiny arms and legs or swam in the sea and then crawled out, grew arms and legs, became all these different types of animals somehow. How can you even believe that? That is the part. You don't see amoebas sprouting into giraffes today.
I've never seen that.
Obviously, they say it takes billions of years, but there's no evidence of that even beginning to happen.
Right. But, you know, it's interesting, too, because some of these people that are just saying, like, I'm done with God, I'm done with religion, I think in a way they kind of are onto a little bit of something, but they just don't. They're not hitting on it correctly. They say that one person said Christians doing un-Christian things. Or this other person said, I'm doing a lot more learning, studying, and kind of making decisions myself rather than listening to someone else. And there's a certain people are just kind of fed up with the business model of religion, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But what about just taking a look in the Bible?
Yeah.
Reading it. And we've got a great course, the Herbert W. Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course. That's free. You can get it at thetrumpet.com. It'll take you through your Bible. I think that's a great thing when somebody says, like, I don't know. I hear all this stuff. I want to find out myself. Well, good. But what happens a lot of times is they don't care to find out. They just go about their business.
Right.
Instead of, well, why don't you find out? Why don't you take a look at the Bible and see? If you don't like a certain religion and you don't think it's right, well, then prove it.
Mm-hmm.
One way or the other. That's what hopefully some people will do.
Yeah, there's too much intellectual laziness. Just too many excuses saying, well, I don't want someone else to tell me. That's not even the point. Someone should be able to teach you, and you should know based on your hard work in proving it whether or not it's true. That it does take a little bit of effort on your part. Regarding that part about too many Christians doing unchristian things, the definition of a Christian is someone who follows Christ's example. So yeah, you could go to services on the weekend and then say, I'm a Christian. But if you're not doing your best in every area to follow Christ's example, that does lend itself to a lot of hypocrisy.
Yeah.
A lot of people who say they're Christians based on half an hour a week and then doing whatever they want to the rest of the week.
Right. Well, and even there, you have to say, well, okay, well, what did Christ do? Because you hear Christ's name thrown around all the time.
Yeah.
To support just about anything that you can imagine. So what did he do? How would you know? Well, it's recorded. I mean, it's in the Bible. People could read it and take a look at what he said. And he makes some statements that are very contradictory to what some people commonly believe to be true because they've assumed it or they've heard it. And it'd be good to take a look. See for yourself.
Yeah. Critics judge by churches and how people conduct themselves, and they don't look at the original example that people claim to be following. The vast majority of people are not going to follow Christ's example because it's unnatural. It's a difficult thing to do because he was perfect for 33 and a half years. But at the same time, if you do have the right belief system, it is going to keep you out of a lot of trouble that you could get into.
Yeah, I mean, what you can think about just even when Christ was alive, he did not have a lot of followers. He was not popular. And, you know, he was teaching people, and some said, these are hard sayings. These are hard teachings. Who can do this?
Yeah.
Because the message was a little too intense for them because it meant changing the way they did things.
Yeah.
And that's the hardest thing to do. You know, what's, I think, really popular, say, in a lot of religion today is sort of the feel-good self-help. You know, you can do it. We can do it together. We can, you know, whatever. We can find success. And it's an appealing message. But the part of the message that isn't appealing for a lot of people is that there is a certain list of do's and don'ts. There's rights and there's wrongs. And that's where people get a little nervous because it means some actual change. And that's what's hard to do.
And it is so difficult to follow those do's and don'ts that people think, well, why try in the first place? You're right. Christ only had over 100 followers on earth. And today, the number of so-called Christians is in the billions. And nearly every one of them has a different set of beliefs. So how can every one of them claim to be following Christ if they're all doing and saying different things? That defies simple common sense, and that could make a lot of doubters as well.
Yeah, that's one of the things they even bring up in this poll is that it's divisive. You know, you see a lot of religious battles going on. And here's another one that's really interesting. This is kind of general, so I'm not sure. I think probably people come down on both sides of this, but the church's teachings on homosexuality.
Mm.
major social changes going on in society. The churches are trying to navigate them, and some people don't like the fact that they're too lenient, and some people don't like the fact that they think they're too strict. Is there a right and a wrong on it? I mean, what's the goal of the churches? Is it just to get people in and pay money? Because if that's the case, you kind of have to appease everybody. But is there a right or a wrong? And I think that's what people are struggling with. Do we have teachings that we're actually going to hold to, or is it anything goes?
Well, that's the huge problem, because when you say the law is done away and you can basically do whatever you want, well, what about homosexuals? Is there a right or a wrong there as well? I mean, it pretty much extends infinitely. If you don't think that you have any specific laws to keep as a Christian, it's just, well, at some point, your logic is going to get all tangled up.
Yeah, it does. We see that in just all these societal changes. There's no one, there are a few, I guess, that do step out and say, you know, their opinions, but if it doesn't go with the popular opinion, a lot of times it brings a lot of wrath from other people. But, you know, for those that are trying to have religion of some kind or want to believe in God, well, what does he say about these things? And that's what people have to look into.
Yeah, and the only reason you would face persecution based on your beliefs is if you were deep into them and truly committed to them. You have to take your beliefs extremely seriously, or as soon as someone criticizes them, well, I don't want the conflict. I don't want people to hate me, so I'm just going to back down and do what everyone else is doing.
Yeah, there is sort of a thought that if you do hold to a belief in God, and you do hold to, especially if you hold to what he says in his word, that you're ignorant, or, you know, you're just kind of backwoodsy.
People who have never gone past the fifth grade or something crazy like that.
And they'll shoot out there, you know, oh, fairy tales and this and that and the other. But again, not many people really stop to even look into what the Bible says about very many topics. We have a program on here as well, Live by Every Word, and that gets into some of those topics that people take kind of for granted that they know. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times it's different than what people think. They've heard something, you know, you die, you go to heaven, you know, common things that people think about. But what does the Bible say about that or any of those topics? It's the more you get into it, the more interesting it is.
Right. Yeah. The Bible really does have the foundation. The Bible doesn't claim to have every detail about every aspect of everything ever in existence, but it does have the foundation. And if you go to that and you then build your education on top of that, you do have a belief system that keeps you on track, and really, you can be very well educated with the Bible as a foundation. That's just really a lie for people to say that, well, I believe the Bible, so I don't read any other books. I mean, that doesn't make any sense at all.
Well, Abraham Lincoln, right? I mean, what did he study? The Bible and Shakespeare.
Mm-hmm.
So he was a pretty smart guy.
Very smart.
He did a pretty good job on most things. It's just a really interesting write-up. You can even go to Pew Research Center, and you can, the title for that one is Why America's quote-unquote nuns, not nuns like the ladies in the churches, but the nuns in the sense of people not going to any religions. N-O-N-E-S. Why America's nuns left religion behind. They've got some more details on that. It's a pretty interesting study. TheTrumpet.com has an article about that as well. And there's another headline on the side that says, Americans may be getting less religious, but feelings of spirituality are on the rise. Well, good.
Yeah, spirituality is a really hazy type of topic. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. People need to think about how America was founded on religious principles. And people always complain about how maybe the country is weakening today. Is there any coincidence that so many people are turning away from religious principles?
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, look at the trend here of how people feel towards God, and then look at what's happening in society and just the United States in general. I mean, some people would have you believe it's getting better, but I think the facts on the ground speak the very opposite, that it's getting much worse.
Yeah, you have to be living in a fairy tale land to think that things are getting better today. Obviously, we have more options in terms of maybe employment or recreation than ever before, and technology is incredible. But look at our standing in the world and how other nations are disrespecting us like never before. That would have never happened in the past. A lot of morally courageous leaders prevented that from happening.
Yeah, moral courage, that's something that we don't see a lot of today, but it's an interesting topic here. Why America's Nuns Left Religion Behind. You can find that at Pew Research, Research, sorry, pewresearch.org. That'll do it for us on Trumpet Radio Live today. For myself, Dwight Falk, and Grant Turgeon, thanks for joining us today. Make sure you listen for the Trumpet Daily Radio Show that's coming up here in just a bit, and also the Key of David program that's on the way as well. Hopefully you have a great rest of your Thursday, and we'll see you back here tomorrow. You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, or online, kpcg.fm, live link at thetrumpet.com.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.